Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Hillary Clinton's slamming of North Carolina's voter suppression bill just signed by the Republican governor that she said reads like the greatest hits of voter suppression. Ari Berman, a contributing writer for The Nation who has been reporting from North Carolina, joins us to discuss the state's Republicans' flagrant assault on voting rights that have been enabled by a recent Supreme Court decision. And his article at The Nation, North Carolina's sweeping voter suppression law is challenged in court. Then we'll speak with one of America's premier military experts who, along with The Washington Post's Dana Priest, wrote the groundbreaking expose of the privatized national security state, Top Secret America. William Arkin joins us to discuss his explosive follow-up, American Coup, How a Terrified Government is Destroying the Constitution. We'll discuss his brand new book that describes the desk-bound takeover of the highest reaches of government by a coterie of gray men of the national security establishment that he calls the executive agents. We will look into how doomsday has become every day in contemporary America as a result of the forever war and how the mechanism is already in place for an American coup that William Arkin warns about in his latest and most powerful reminder of our fading freedoms that we are trading away for a fictional guarantee of security. And joining us now is Ari Berman, a contributing writer for The Nation magazine and an investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute. He has written extensively about American politics, foreign policy, and the intersection of money and politics. The author of Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics. He is currently working on a book on the history of voting rights. His latest article at The Nation is North Carolina's sweeping voter suppression law is challenged in court. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ari Berman.
Thanks for having me back, Ian.
And Hillary Clinton, speaking before the American Bar Association, really slammed North Carolina's voting restrictions bill, which the governor signed into law, and saying it reads like the greatest hits of voter suppression, and quoting her, "In the week since the ruling," meaning the Supreme Court ruling, getting rid of the relevant part of the Voting Rights Act that protected minority voters in the South, "in the week since the ruling, we've seen an unseemly rush by previously covered jurisdictions to enact or enforce laws that will make it harder for millions of our fellow Americans to vote." So is she throwing down the gauntlet for 2014 and 2016 in terms of this key issue over who's going to get to vote in these elections?
Well, it was refreshing to hear her speak because she laid out the issue so clearly. She didn't sidestep it. She didn't couch it. She really said, you know, there has been this massive effort to prevent people from voting, trying to address what she called a phantom epidemic of election fraud. And so she really went after the bad actors. We've seen seven southern states pass or implement new voting restrictions since this Supreme Court decision in Shelby County and Holder in late June. And this is a really very, very alarming development. We haven't seen anything like this since the Voting Rights Act passed in 1965. This is really a crisis situation right now in our democracy. And I'm glad to hear someone with the magnitude of Hillary Clinton speak so clearly about the issue. I think it bodes well going forward. It shows, number one, that voting rights is going to remain an issue for a long time. But it also shows that people who want to be considered national leaders, like Clinton does going forward in 2016, know that they have to get ahead of this issue. They have to address it, and they have to lay out a plan to actually solve it. And so I hope that her statements will put more pressure on Congress to actually resurrect the provisions that were struck down by the Supreme Court in the Voting Rights Act. And I also hope it will bring more attention to these states, because really we're in a situation now, like we were in the civil rights movement, where state fights are really national battles.
And North Carolina's governor, Pat McCrory, just signed this, as you describe it, as the worst voter suppression law. And just quoting from your article in The Nation, Ari Berman, "The sweeping law requires strict government-issued voter IDs to cast a ballot, cuts the number of early voting days by a week, eliminates same-day voter registration during the early voting period, makes it easy for vigilante poll watchers to challenge the validity of eligible voters, and expands the influence of unregulated corporate money in state elections." What else does it do? I mean, my God.
I mean, it actually does a lot more. I mean, really what they did is everything that was in North Carolina that made it easy to vote, they took away and replaced it with a whole number of restrictions that make it harder to vote. And so, for example, we've never seen a state implement same-day voter registration. So in North Carolina, you can show up during the early voting period, you can register to vote, and then you can vote in the same day. We know that that increases voter turnout by up to 10%. We've never seen a state pass something like that and then repeal it. Because usually when states have high voter turnouts, they like it. They want to keep the turnout high. But what North Carolina Republicans saw is they saw Barack Obama win the state in 2008, surprisingly, and they saw him almost win it in 2012. And the way he won it and almost won again was to get a very large turnout of young minority and women voters. That was the core of his coalition in that state. And so they've really gone after that core. They've gone after students, for example, by not allowing student IDs as a form of photo ID to cast a ballot. They've gone over African-Americans by cutting back early voting. African-Americans, 70% of African-Americans voted early in North Carolina in 2012. So it's a huge issue there, eliminating same-day registration, making it easier for people to challenge the validity of eligible voters on Election Day. All of this stuff really disproportionately impacts minority voters there. And at the same time, what they're doing is they're basically saying to the 1% of the state, you can have more power. Not only are we going to make it harder for your political opponents to vote, we're going to make it easier for you to funnel all this more corporate money into the political system, saying that, for example, candidates don't have to declare who's paying for their ads. Money can be funneled through the state party in ways that it couldn't before. I mean, this stuff has nothing to do with the integrity of the electoral process, but they just jammed everything bad they could in there because they have these large majorities in the legislature, and I guess they figured it was now or never.
Again, I'm speaking with Ari Berman, a contributing writer for The Nation magazine and an investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute. He's written extensively about American politics, foreign policy, and the intersection of money and politics. The author of Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics. He's currently working on a book on the history of voting rights. And his latest article at The Nation is North Carolina's Sweeping Voter Suppression Law is Challenged in Court. Now, you've been down there, Ari, for some time in North Carolina reporting on these Moral Monday demonstrations. And you just mentioned that the Republicans are pushing through everything they can while they can to hold on to power. Obviously, demographics are working against them. And when you mentioned how much they've enabled the rich and powerful who basically own the Republican Party, if not nationally, certainly in North Carolina, they all got into power largely because of one local billionaire, Art Pope. So, I mean, not surprising, surely.
Well, I mean, North Carolina is really a case study in how to buy a state. I mean, Art Pope came in 2010. He spent a few million dollars, was able to win all these state legislative races when no one was really paying attention. That gave Republicans a huge majority in the legislature, which they hadn't had in 100 years. There was a Democratic governor at that point, so they really couldn't get a lot done. But in 2012, he spent $500,000 bankrolling the GOP candidate for Governor Pat McCrory, who's now the governor. Now, McCrory's basically taken his cues from the Tea Party, which Art Pope has really funded in that state. And so you have a situation where not only is Pope so responsible for the election of the Republican majority in that state with the outside contributions that were he was able to make through the Citizens United decision, but then McCrory actually named him budget director. So, I mean, he's in charge of the whole economics of North Carolina, which, you know, would have been like, you know, Mitt Romney getting elected and naming Charles or David Koch to run the budget for the government, which would have been just been an absolutely radical and shocking thing, even for someone like Mitt Romney to do. But in North Carolina, Pat McCrory did it, and that really set the tone for the state. And the legislature just did so many radical things, whether it's kicking people off unemployment benefits, declining Medicaid expansion, giving the 1% a tax cut while raising taxes on everyone else, attaching new abortion restrictions first to a bill banning Sharia law, and then resurrecting it as a bill banning dealing with motorcycle safety. That's how they slipped in these new abortion restrictions. So there's just been so much stuff they've done that has been so radical. And the last thing they did before they left town, because they're gone until 2014 now, the last thing they did was make it harder for all these people that are opposed to these policies to be able to vote. It really was just an unbelievably cynical power grab.
Well, I'm sure Al-Qaeda is alive and well down there in North Carolina, and all of those good Christians are being afflicted with Sharia law by this tide of Muslim takeover of the United States.
Well, it's funny, you know, when they were banning Sharia law, and then they slipped in this abortion restrictions, people were saying, well, that's kind of the kind of thing the Taliban would actually do. So really, I mean, they've really kind of shown a new low for democratic governance. They haven't shown a lot of respect for it, both in terms of how they got elected, how they've governed, and now trying to take away people's right to vote. I think people realize what's going on here. I mean, the North Carolina legislature has a 20% approval rating. All the legislation they've passed, including this voting bill, has been very unpopular. The Moral Monday Coalition, which I've covered very closely in the state, a multiracial, a multi-issue coalition of social justice led by Reverend Barber of the NAACP down there, is growing in size every week. So there's a lot of mobilized and motivated people there. And that's why, for example, you saw three lawsuits right out of the gate being filed to challenge these new voting restrictions. People aren't going to just take it lying down. They're really going to try to do everything they can to mobilize against what the legislature is doing.
And Arib, I mean, you just mentioned the North Carolina NAACP. They who have brought forth this lawsuit alleging that five provisions of these new laws disproportionately impact African American voting. The evidence in your article is overwhelming.
I mean, yeah, there's just no doubt about it. I mean, the facts are the facts. I mean, we know, for example, that African Americans are 23% of registered voters in the state, but they were 29% of those who voted early. They were 30% of those who cast ballots out of precinct that will no longer be counted. They were 35% of those who don't have ID. They're 41% of those who use same-day registration. I mean, there's just an unbelievable disproportionate impact in terms of how these changes will affect people. And the lawsuits basically allege that North Carolina Republicans knew this. They were presented with the evidence that this happened, that this would happen, that it would disproportionately impact minority voters, and they did it anyway. And in many cases, that was the reason they did it. And so they're alleging, interestingly enough, that this law was enacted with intentional discrimination. And they're trying to use a provision of the Voting Rights Act called Section 3 to what's known as bail in North Carolina, so that North Carolina has to approve its voting changes with the federal government. What the Supreme Court got rid of was that provision that allowed you to have to clear your changes. States with the worst history of voting discrimination have to clear their changes with the federal government. They got rid of Section 4, which is how states were covered under Section 5, the pre-clearance provision. But there still is this provision called Section 3 that if you can prove intentional discrimination, states can be covered again under Section 5 for a period of time. And so the hope is that a court will rule that not only are these changes discriminatory, but they were enacted with intentional discrimination, and thus North Carolina goes back under supervision of the federal government.
And just in addition to the evidence that you provided here about how this disproportionately impacts African-American voters, 70% of African-American voters who voted in the 2012 general election used early voting, which they can no longer do. Some of the stuff...
They can still use early voting, they just don't have as much time.
Well, they've cut it to a week, right?
Yeah. Exactly. They've cut it from about 21 days or so, I forget the exact number in 2012, they cut it off by a week. Now, that might not sound a lot, but that's what Florida did in 2012. They cut early voting by a week. And we saw the kind of impact that had with long lines. You get rid of a week of early voting, you get rid of same-day registration, you put a photo ID in there, you add a provision allowing people to challenge voters' validity on Election Day. That is a recipe for much longer lines, much more electoral chaos. That's the exact opposite of what people wanted after the 2012 election. They wanted people to address those long lines. Obama talked about it in his election speech. He talked about it in his State of the Union speech. And unfortunately, we're seeing states move totally contrary to what public opinion is in terms of voting rights.
So, Ari Berman, if a billionaire, Art Pope, can buy a legislature, which he's done in North Carolina, for only a few million dollars, obviously the Democrats were asleep at the switch. What can be done now? Obviously, you know, this is going to cause the long lines and what we saw in the last election. And people are also showed in the last election that they're determined not to have their votes taken away. But it would seem to me it would make more sense than to find ways to comply, at least to the voter ID laws. Who is going to fund that kind of activity? And if you're an elderly resident of North Carolina who's voted all your life and suddenly you can't vote because you don't have an ID, does that mean that you have to dig up your birth certificate? And even if somebody's going to pay for it, for example, if you ask me to find my birth certificate, I don't think I can, you know?
So people who were born outside of North Carolina but live there now need to pay for a birth certificate to be able to get this supposedly free state ID. So that right there is what would be known in the past as a poll tax. I mean, this issue came up in Texas, and the federal courts last year, which heard the Texas voter ID case, were very clear that this was an undue burden on the franchise. So that's one problem. The other problem is that in North Carolina, you have elderly residents who were born at home in the Jim Crow South. They never had a birth certificate, so it's going to be difficult for them to now get one. You also have the problem of students who live in North Carolina, who go to school there, who don't have a North Carolina driver's license. They're not going to be able to vote in the state either. So you have a number of people. Those students can still vote in their home state, of course, absentee, but it is really worrisome that there are people that are going to have a lot of trouble complying with this law, both because they either don't have the ID or they have to jump through a number of hurdles to get it. We're talking about 318,000 voters, registered voters, who don't have that state-issued ID, well in excess of 100,000 voted in the last election. So at the very least, we have 150,000 people thereabouts who are not eligible to vote right now and have to do something about it. That's a lot of people to have to get to the polls, especially when you consider that 100,000 more people voted using same-day registration, which they're not going to be able to do. So presumably when people show up in the next election, those 100,000 people are going to have to know they can't just show up and register to vote and then vote. They're going to have to register well ahead of time to be able to participate in the political process. I mean, it's going to require a major organizational effort. I think North Carolina is in a good place right now because they have this More Monday coalition. They've already been doing this kind of organizing. They can transition better than other states, but it's also true that the Democratic Party's been a mess down there. They're not well organized, so they're going to have to get better organized. They're going to have to run better candidates. There's going to have to be an infusion of funds into the state. There obviously was enough funding to file these lawsuits, but there's going to have to be more funding to support the North Carolina NAACP and other groups in the coalition. I think they have the progressive infrastructure down there to challenge this. It's just a question of whether they can get the resources they need to be able to pull off what I think what's going to be a very substantial campaign to have to get people the IDs and make them aware of all the other restrictions if these laws aren't blocked in court.
But there's a sort of aspect to what these North Carolina Republicans are doing that sort of is a bit like King Canute trying to stop the tide in the sense that demographics are working against them. They've obviously figured a way to hold on to power longer than they would normally by suppressing the vote. And that, of course, is in many ways how American democracy works, that the Republicans get every last one of their voters out and the Democrats fail to inspire their voters. And you're just pointing out that they better get their act together down in North Carolina.
No, North Carolina's had some pretty good candidates. I mean, they have a Democratic senator. It wasn't so long ago they had a Democratic governor. This Republican control of the state is really an aberration. And what Republicans did in North Carolina and really throughout the country is they got lucky. They won the 2010 election at a time when health care reform was very unpopular and the economy was very bad. Because they won in 2010 when the new census maps came out, they were able to control the redistricting process in the state. And so North Carolina Republicans very, very aggressively gerrymandered their state. They basically did it by putting as many minority voters as they could into as few districts as they could to essentially have pockets, very few pockets of Democratic support, and the rest of the state would be Republican. You had a situation, for example, in the United States House. 51% of North Carolina voters voted for Democratic House candidates, but Republicans retained 9 of 13 seats. which is really extraordinary gerrymander when you think about it. So the first thing they did is they tried to protect themselves with the districts. The second thing they're doing is trying to protect themselves with the voting laws. I think they've been largely successful with the districts so far. We'll see how that plays out. So now the question is, can people overcome these voting changes? I mean, I think we sometimes underestimate the ability of politicians to try to manipulate the political process in their favor, and that's exactly what's going on in North Carolina right now.
Well, I think this whole exercise where North Carolina has become a kind of petri dish for what happens when the Republican Tea Party takes over should be a warning to all progressives and all liberals, many of whom say that there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans. The difference here couldn't be more stark. And some of these laws they passed are truly absurd. I mean, the idea that that you can't drive a hybrid car because it taxes you extra for driving a hybrid car because it saves gasoline and you should be spending more on gasoline, forbidding the use of the word global warming. I mean, that's what I was alluding to in that kind of King Canute analogy, that they're really dealing with an alternative reality here, but so far it's working for them.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's working for them so far, and we'll see what's happened, what will happen in 2014. I mean, I think there's going to be a very mobilized Democratic and progressive electorate in that state determined to turn out and vote to try to stop these things. And we just don't know the impact, for example, that gerrymandering and the voting changes will have in trying to make it harder for the legislature to flip. I do think there's a very serious risk of overreach here. I mean, listen, this kind of structural stuff, the gerrymandering, the voting changes, can protect you, but it can only protect you so much. And if you've really alienated virtually every constituency in the state other than your own hardcore base, you're in a lot of trouble. I mean, North Carolina is still a pretty moderate southern state, and 70% of moderates in North Carolina disapprove of this voting bill. So you're in a situation where they're really in a precarious position now. Yes, they basically got through everything they wanted, so they were very successful legislatively, but there could be a lot of blowback. And you're absolutely right, not just in North Carolina, but all across the country, whether it's in Wisconsin or it's in Pennsylvania or it's in Florida, we're seeing very clearly the outcome of Republican governance. And it's been really, really shocking to watch. And I think things that people took for granted, like the right to vote, are now issues that we're fighting over all over again.
Well, Ari Berman, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Again, I've been speaking with Ari Berman, who's a contributing writer for The Nation magazine and an investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute. He's written extensively about American politics, foreign policy, and the intersection of money and politics. The author of Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics. He's currently working on a book on the history of voting rights. And his latest article at The Nation is North Carolina's Sweeping Voter Suppression Law is Challenged in Court. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with one of America's premier experts on the military and the national security state, who has a new book, American Coup, How a Terrified Government is Destroying the Constitution.
Don't need to change your future's eyes. You don't need to change.